Welcome back to another week of the Geek Whisperers. I'm John Troyer.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm Matt Brender.
We are back here. We're recording this in January 2015. We are super pleased to have with us as a guest today our former friend and colleague. Wait a minute. No, that's not right. Friend and former colleague. Or former
current friend.
Let's go with friend.
Well, the podcast isn't over.
Yeah, that's right. Drop the mic. Walk off. Nick Weaver, who is currently at Intel. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, so let's get this out of the way first. You have a nice fancy title. What is your current title and where are you working these days?
My official title is Director SDI Labs at Intel. So I work in the Cloud Platform Group. I'm mostly focused on cutting edge, bleeding edge, software-defined infrastructure, interesting stuff. So cloud automation, provisioning, consumption, you know, public, private cloud, and main goal is like advanced R&D, so bootstrapping, prototyping, proof of concept internally, or even possibly externally, stuff that might be interesting to driving cool stuff that runs on Intel.
It's so cool. So the question of the week, Nick, is did you ever expect to get where you are when you first started in the world of IT?
I didn't even know where I am existed. I was the guy they hired to plug in monitors. Like I was, that was my
okay.
First
I gotta
job.
Hear that.
I worked for a retail company, really amazing one actually. I don't remember how old was I. It's a great question.
Child labor?
I'm so old, I forgot. Yeah, no, not quite. I was old. I was in my 20s. I kind of bounced around a couple different jobs and, you know, you make dumb decisions and then you make more dumb decisions and more dumb decisions and you end up accidentally making a good one.
Yes.
That's kind of my 20s. Anyways, so I was a company called, and anybody in the South will get this pretty well, there's a company called James Avery, which is this big jewelry company in the South. And I grew up in the hometown of their headquarters and I happened to get this like, I got in their IT department, but it's a retail company. And so they would just bring in, you know, retail PCs that were bad and you'd go plug in monitors and see if stuff worked. And it was desktop, but it wasn't even like cool desktop, like automating and deploying. It was like desktop, like if that doesn't work, call Dell. Mm-hmm. And then if it does work, ship it out. And that was my first job.
That sounds so boring.
Well, do you know what I did though?
No, I have no idea.
And that's what I did. And within like 4 months, I figured out how that Microsoft had this thing called Riz. And we were able to crank out maybe 3 or 4 a week PCs. You know, it was like ridiculously slow because we would go to each one by hand. And then we wanted to install them. We would actually have to go get a disk and reinstall. And then we have to go install each piece of software in the right order. You know what I mean? Super manual. And I was like, man, there's got to be a way to do this faster because I'm bored out of my mind doing the same thing over and over again. So I figured out this whole Riz Microsoft thing. I set up the server without permission, installed it, and I got it where we could like do like 13 to 20 a day. And
oh my god, the rest of production.
Yeah, and the rest is history. And I made a lot of people angry, really, really angry at me. That's where I learned that sometimes you make people mad if you actually make things better.
If you're in a factory environment, that is a very important lesson you're sharing with our listeners.
Yeah,
Let's be honest with our audience, right? Like so much of some of the sysadministration, especially like in smaller shops that are used to it, like it is factory-esque where you take the server, you take a while to unbox it, you install stuff manually. The idea of what you just did, like you will piss people off.
You took away their jobs.
Yeah.
You took away jobs, Nick.
So, yeah, I remember going home from work many days and going, I can't believe how much they don't like me. Like, it was hard. Like, there was like emotional damage from that then. I've got a lot thicker skin now. It's like, so you know, over time, I've got like, wait a second, I'm good at this, and those guys suck. So never screw you guys. But you know, it took a while to figure out because you know, I was so junior and young. And that's actually why I'm a big fan of, you know, if you've got people and men and women in IT who are new and younger and experimenting, they should be highly encouraged and given good feedback. And I'm one of those people, if I see somebody bullying somebody who's junior, I'm not very nice to them. I'm the anti-bully of IT because I think those people shouldn't be bullied. They should be encouraged because I used to be that person.
I love it. Nice. So it sort of create an environment where people can break shit, for lack of a better way of putting
right.
it.
Yeah, you want to do things in safety, but you don't want to protect the status quo.
Yeah.
Just to protect it. You want to protect risk. You want to manage risk. You want to manage certain things, but you want innovation, you want experimentation, you want evolution in safe ways, and there's a habit. I have a saying that some people in IT, they like to build mansions, right? And you shouldn't be building mansions. You should be building places for other people to live in, and then you move on to the next thing.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's great. I think that as we talk with more people about their careers, I suspect many people started with hands-on, crappy hardware jobs. I think we don't have that many data points yet, but I think that's going to be the case.
We're not talking about Intel, though, right? Not Intel hardware.
No, it's not crappy.
No, the jobs were crappy. The hardware was wonderful. Right. But, you know, low level, here's your replacement mouse, sir. You know,
yeah.
Let me re-image your disk. Oh, you got a virus. Let me, like, low level putting together, let me plug in that card sort of jobs. I think it builds character anyway.
It does. In some of those jobs can be extremely monotonous because they're not trying to solve the core problem or be even faster about fixing it. They just want to, you know, keep band-aiding that over and over again. And I know people who are happy with those kind of jobs. I just didn't happen to be that kind of person.
So the seeds of your meddling with stuff were planted early there.
I'm even going to give it causality. Would Nick Weaver be the Nick Weaver we know today if he hadn't been bored off his ass, right? It's kind of probably, but I think it's interesting that, like you said, that rote kind of thing, if you're that sort of person who has to meddle and fix, you're in an environment where you could do that kind of that work. It's interesting. It all makes sense in retrospect.
Yeah, it was funny because this is really, really super dated. So back then, the only way you find out stuff that was going on in IT, because there was the internet, but there wasn't really really great blogs or even good internet like technology news. Like you didn't do this, you didn't listen to podcasts. So the way you found out stuff in tech back then was you read those magazines. Remember those stacks of the Microsoft ones and all those magazines that would just come in, they just ship all of them to you. And you'd flip through and go, oh, there's a new security product. And that's how you found out there was a new security product, was because you found it in a magazine. And I remember my manager at the time, this amazing lady named Laura Brown, she was awesome. She got me the job. She took care of me. I appreciate her in immense ways. And she told me when I left, because I went to go take a job up in Dallas, and she said, one of these days I'm going to see you in the front of one of those magazines. And I was like, that sticks with me, right? Is I was like, wow, is that even possible? Because I hadn't done that much, but she like saw the potential in me. And I always remembered her saying that.
Nice.
Yeah, Nick, I have this vision of you, and it's because of my past coming into EMC at a time where just there's a lore of Nick Weaver that he builds things that we show at demos at big events. It's just like the man behind the curtain. What's that part of your story? It seems like there's this idea that like you are the developer that somehow affects the stage.
You know, I wish I knew how that happened. The first real time that happened was I was at EMC 6 weeks. So first of all, I never worked at a vendor. I was in a pre-sales vSpecialist role, and I'd never done pre-sales. I didn't even know what pre-sales really meant at that point. They just hired me because I knew how to build what looked like a vBlock before it was a vBlock. And somehow I ended up hooking up with this amazing guy named Steven Spellacy, and they pitched this idea for a demo they wanted to say, hey, we could do this. And I kind of just said, this is what I would do. And he was like, that's amazing. Can you build that? I was like, yeah, I think so. And that ended up being Pat Gelsinger's keynote demo for long distance vMotion and he had just started at EMC. So he literally showed up at EMC. They basically walked on stage and like in front of everyone, like 6,000 people, the demo was what I just popped in my head. And I think for me, it was a mixture. At the time I was at EMC, and I'm sure it's the same way at EMC, but I landed at EMC at a point in time where if you had a good vision to do something and you took the responsibility to execute it, they'd let you go do it. And I just happened to be the right place at the right time to be bold enough to say it. And then I had amazing leadership in like Spellacy and Chad and Wade and Brian and all those great guys to go be able to execute on it. And I built trust on that one, and they kept trusting me over and over and over again, which was really amazing.
Hey, I want to step back one more step though. You already had the tools where you thought you could build something. So many IT people, whether they're at a vendor or in the field or at a, you know, customer actual working production site, somehow think that their job is an operator and they just kind of turn some knobs and make sure everything is green and maybe they're on call. But you had already figured out, I mean, you'd done some automation at the very beginning and you already somehow had figured out that, wait a minute, I actually am a tool using primate. I can do some scripting or I can set up some stuff. Did that ever look to you like an actual decision or did that just kind of happen?
You know, I actually wonder myself, the older you get, I think the more you kind of start to wonder, wait a second, how do I tick? Like, why do I do that? I don't know. I just, a personal thing, and I look back and I wonder, you know, why did I do those things? And I think a bit of it was every, or at least in my experience, a lot of IT people have this hero mode, right, where you want to be seen as a hero. I think some people get into IT that way. Some people get into desktop support, and they become heroes, and they get addicted to it, right?
It's adrenaline
because you show – right, and you get addicted to being a hero. And for me, a lot of it was motivational in that I was in a really great position, and I was a really good leader at a really good company as a customer, and some bad political stuff happened, and I had to leave. And in leaving, I decided to try out this crazy thing called being a vendor side. I liked Chad's message, and I switched. But I started in a place where I had no experience. I was a pre-sales guy with zero experience. I didn't know what I was doing. But I knew how to make things work because in my previous job, I was leading guys that we would just hack anything together, right? Whatever the problem was, we would make something or create something to solve it. And so that was my way of going, I'm going to go and I'm going to prove – I'm going to be a hero and I'm going to prove I can do this stuff. And so did I know that I could actually pull it off? No. I was taking a huge risk and I was scared, you know, out of my pants. And don't get me wrong. I mean, you should have my wife on the podcast and have her explain where she had to literally come bring me food because I would not eat for like 20 hours from like sitting there trying to work with one stupid problem. And a lot of times the problems were things where I just didn't understand the domain. Something would be really simple to somebody else, but I refused to give up because I had to get this thing done. And so it's as simple as that. It was almost this like I need to prove that I'm worth the money they're paying me. I want to make a name for myself in a one way. I want to be a hero. I want these people. But there's also this – the third thing in there is there's that idiocy at the time, and it's infected me now because it's just how I want to work. There was this like camaraderie thing, right? It wasn't like I was just doing this for myself. Chad did a great job of saying, hey, we're all in this together and you represent each other. And it was like I met these guys and they were amazing, guys and girls. And I met these people and they were amazing and they were such a great team. And I wanted to do something for them too. And that was the third team. It was like me doing this. It wasn't like Nick Weaver did this. No, it was like the V specialist. Holy cow, our pre-sales team just built a keynote demo. And I was proud that – because I knew there were lots of guys in my team that could have done the same thing I did. It wasn't even that hard. I just happened to be the right place at the right time with the guts to go say it. And I knew that I moved the needle for them. And then – and there's guys like Clint Kitson, who's absolutely brilliant. I mean he's a better coder than me by far. And he's doing stuff that's way better than I ever did at EMC. And in a way, I felt like, you know, I'm just proving that the idea that these guys can do this should be something standard. And I moved the needle for them. And in return, you know, the greatest thing I got was their appreciation. I mean, that was
– yeah.
The public applause was great. But when you work with somebody on a daily basis, you're in the same fire and the same thing. And that's how I like to build my teams now. So now I'm a team leader, right? I want to build teams where you're on a common cause. You're able to have real good transparency the way you share problems with each other. You're able to criticize stuff in an open, honest way. And then you go have beers later, right? And well, it's this thing where you do it for each other. You realize you're on the same path because as a unit, as a whole – I was never in the military. But as a unit as a whole, it's better that you do it for each other than you do it for yourself.
And I want to just jump in there and say one thing I also observe – again, armchair psychologist, I have the pleasure of being friends with Nick on various other social media channels, so I get to see this picture. I feel like you're the kind of person, you are where you are because you challenge yourself, that your mind moves really quickly and in a great way, and that if you get bored, then you seek a new challenge. So you go into positions that may make you a little uncomfortable and push you, but it's
very true.
It's landed you. And I see that in like – in your life choices too, and in the greatest way. Like you are, I really admire that kind of courage because it's, you actively say, this makes me feel a little nervous, but I'm going to go do it anyway. What an amazing, that's a great thing.
There's negatives to it too though, because I'll be honest, because I want people to understand that it's not like I went and made these decisions and I went and spent all that time. It was easy. I mean, there were penalties in my family during that period that I regret a bit and that I've had to try to make up for. I mean, there's rewards for them in that too. Looking back at it, I wish I did the same great things, but I wish I put more balance in my life too.
Yeah.
Mm. I wanted to highlight a point that you always bring up, Amy, that how improv is such a part of career trajectory.
Yeah.
And we usually talk about it in influencer marketing, but I think like this saying yes and just taking that leap, even if you're not 100% sure where it's going. Nick, you just described an incredible like improv session and you pulled the rabbit out of the hat. At the end of it, it just reminded me of something you would normally highlight, Amy.
I agree. And I think it's interesting, too. I like that before everybody jumps to follow that, I appreciate your cautionary tale of with age and experience comes wisdom, hopefully. And that while you're on that quest, and obviously you're a very driven person, somebody who works hard to execute, to make sure you don't lose sight of that balance.
This is something that I want to always fight personally. So I've had people come up and compliment me out of the blue, and I appreciate that. But what I want to hear is, I like the part where they say, dude, you made something easier for me. That's the part I appreciate. I don't want to ever get addicted to the idea that people think I'm awesome, right? Because you're only as good as what you affect them with, and that fades pretty quick. And so I mean, yes, anybody I've ever worked with, I say this phrase all the time, you're only as good as your last good deed. But the problem is your last good deed isn't always necessarily your career. Your last good deed is not necessarily – I mean, that could be as simple as just mentoring someone, is doing some amazing code thing, is moving the needle. The older I get, the more I realize that comes in many forms and how you affect people. And the coolest part is I realize a lot of things I do in technology is actually, you know, makes humanity better. And like I feel like there's a good connection there. But I realized that there was a point in my time at EMC where I was so obsessed with trying to make a name for myself and the team and trying to help them and trying to move the needle – that I almost got a little blind to it. Brian Gracely is a really smart dude. He talks about this really well, and that some people get obsessed. And he understands probably better almost anybody the way I tick. Some people get obsessed with the highs so much in that they forget about the lows until they're in there. And there were times where I would bust my butt for 6 months, do something pretty awesome, and man, I was down for 2 weeks afterwards because the high was over. And then what do I do now? Right? And that's really not healthy either. And so there's a good balance for like have your success, but then have the balance in your life where you can be happy at other things besides just that. Don't become obsessed with one thing. Sorry, that one might have been a little deep and heavy, but
no, I think that's
just trying to share the negative and the life experiences for me in this space.
You have to, Nick. It's never just the beautiful thing that everyone's like, whoa, this Nick guy makes really cool things and I want to be just like him. And if somebody says something like that and you haven't shared this part of the story, it just doesn't feel as real. So I just want to say thank you. It's nice to hear the other part of it, and I'm sure listeners will appreciate the honesty too.
Well, I think you're ruining a perfectly good stereotype about developers.
Yeah.
Because just to sort of jump topics, several things you said, it's so interesting. Again, retrospectively, it feels so logical that you said you're a team leader now. It feels very logical based on your story that you've always had this idea of how to lift other people up, that you have moments of locking yourself down and working on a project and sort of hyper focus that a developer, we think sort of traditionally, again, introverted, quiet, work by themselves, but at the same time, kind of acknowledging a team.
Right. There's two good lessons in there that I'd like to segue in the end that I learned. One was, there's a phrase if you guys watch the Dark Knight series, there's a phrase that stuck with me. You either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become a villain. I don't know if you guys ever heard that line before.
That's great.
And wow. I think that is the ultimate thing for how I look at my career from when I move from one thing to another. It's not like I want to hop companies. I mean, I was in the EMC VMware family because that was a transfer into VMware for almost like over 4 years. I'm in Intel now, and Intel's amazing because I could literally spend 20 years in Intel and do something new every 2 years. I could be here forever. But the idea is you do something amazing, you'll be a hero, and you should leave that project being a hero and mentoring people and being awesome to them. But don't sit there so long that you actually become a blockade and a problem. And I see a lot of people end up in that situation where it's that live in the mansion thing until you become the villain of the project, right?
Yeah. Well, Nick, I can definitely identify. I mean, even at VMware, I had been there long enough that when things changed, I caught myself sometimes getting indignant, like, how we don't do it that way here. And I'm like, wait a minute. What do you mean we don't do it that way here? You mean I didn't do it that way 2 years ago or 3 years ago, and now we don't do it that way. But why shouldn't we do it that way? You get a little bit entitled. You get a little bit safe sometimes if you do stay in one place a long time.
Yeah, no, it's true. It can happen in different ways. You can be stifling someone else's innovation. You can be making yourself miserable, and you don't even know why you're making yourself miserable. And it's because it's basically the part that you loved about the project, that time has passed. It's not for you anymore. It's time for you to find something new and fun.
Boy, you know, this is not the advice our parents would have given us or our grandparents. I want to move it up a little bit to talk a little bit about the transition to being a manager. I hate to divide the world between suits and t-shirts, but in some ways, you know, you've been very hands-on. You've led engineering teams, and now you're kind of, it sounds like you're leading more of a research lab, but you are, you know, you have, as we've talked about, right, you've had plenty of button seat time, right? You have plenty of stick time.
Yeah.
You are not the empty suit that just breezed in and took over. you actually have done this kind of stuff. How has the transition been, you know, at VMware and Intel, from being the guy that goes off and codes things for 40 hours at a time to being more of a manager?
To be fair, I still code a lot. Like,
well, that was the next question.
I mean, let's just be honest. My current team has said, hey, you stay out, you know, and I have to respect their decision. So, you know, eventually the reason is not that they don't want me to code, but, you know, there's a lot of things I could be doing to help them that isn't necessarily sitting there writing code or doing code reviews, right? And if I help them, I should be adding bandwidth to them and not inhibiting them. But here's the real thing for me. The reason I'm getting into leadership in the first place was I had this epiphany. It was the last project. It was the Project Zombie project, where I realized that no matter how good I am and no matter how badass I think I could do, and what obstacle I probably could knock down, there's no way I could do it with a quality, with a stability, or even right if I do it through other people. Smart, intelligent, earnest people. The whole idea of using the same passion I have and kind of my mental map of how I approach things, and just giving the people protection and time and motivation and enabling them as a group. And this comes from Chad Sakich, right? Watching that guy operate and the way he would motivate us and send us out and give us coverage when we needed it and all kinds of stuff. And I realized that no matter how good I think I am, there's nothing I can do that's as impactful as if I do that with a group of really good people. Mm. And that's why I'm in the position I am now, is I realized, like, there was this point where the only way to get better at what I was for me to kind of stop being the only one. And it was really to stop being the hero. Stop trying to be the hero. Instead, be a hero to the people, like your team, be a hero to them, and let them be the heroes to everybody else.
Wow. Amy, that also kind of strikes at the introvert stereotype that we all kind of deal with.
I know, Nick, you really are ruining a whole number of useful dichotomies and stereotypes.
Yeah, well, if I feel like there's a rule, I feel like it should be broken.
Well, I'm going to call out something I saw specifically that you, I think you tweeted of, you know, watch out, I'm the manager that reviews code. So yeah, on the flip side of it, how has that affected the leadership, the management part of your career, that you've got the credibility, you've got street cred?
Well, I mean, right now, to be honest, in leadership, the teams I'm leading aren't going to be too huge, right? I'm not stepping up into giant orgs. And honest, to be honest, there's such great leadership in the group I'm in now that I can stay laser focused. And I prefer smaller, intimate teams, because you get a bit more honesty and you can iterate faster and learn quicker from each other. So I like really heterogeneous teams with lots of varying backgrounds in a really tight knit. It's really like, sounds like a startup, right? I like that kind of thing. And so from a director level thing I'm doing now, I'm definitely not like your super amazing director who's swiping budgets around and figuring out financials. And my boss does that way better than me. And we'll continue to do that. It'll probably take me 5 years to learn how he does it. So I'm going to clear. So when I say I'm doing code reviews, it's basically I do have enough experience that I'm especially in the early stages of our team right now, I'm trying to help out in any way I can. But I'm not afraid to dive into tech. And I am a technically leading person right now, but I realize that the more I'm here, the less of that I will do. So by the end of the year, I'll be doing less and less and less than that, because there are meetings I'm in where I'm enabling things for the team, or I'm making connections, and there's things I'm doing with speaking, and there's all kinds of stuff where it's actually a lot more valuable to those guys later on than me sitting there reading code reviews.
Yeah. Well, and I'm going to pull out a couple of the things that you said sort of while we've been on that struck my ears of, you were thoughtful all along about managers and bosses that led in ways that you respected and liked. And I think that's interesting, sort of as we think about ways to advise people as they go forward, to be mindful, to pay attention, to pick up the things you like. And I also love that you said, you know, you're being very candid about, this is the kind of place I like to lead. This is where I feel strong. This is where my passion is. Because I think sometimes maybe people back down from leadership if they feel like it's all kind of HR related, like you said, budget and reviews, you know, HR kind of stuff, instead of really in the trenches leadership.
I think that's temporary even for me. So I realize, I mean, in a year or two, I may be doing that stuff.
Sure.
And it may be impactful. I mean, it may be impactful. I know it'll be impactful, but once I'm doing that and I realize the value, once I have figured out the value I provide there, I just don't understand. You know, it's new to me, right? And so I don't see the value there necessarily yet. But I realize what I'm doing now. So yeah, right now, yeah, I'm great with smallish teams and hyper productivity, and I'm really good at recruiting really good people, and there's some things I'm really good at a core level. I'm really good at talking people into moving across the country and like doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And there's people who may listen to this podcast who are going to be nodding when I say that, because I'm good at talking people into joining me into the fight for victory.
And that's but leadership. I mean, that's leading by example.
But the same thing, I'm right now, I may be a hero at that, but, you know, I don't want to be a villain at that later. So I'll evolve. And if that evolution is maybe flipping back over and trying to be some intel fellow, if that leadership is eventually chasing up in trying to be an executive, well, not an executive, but you're trying to be some kind of leader at Intel at a bigger level, we'll see. I'm the reason I'm here, honestly, at Intel is because there's a lot of people who know a lot of stuff that I don't know, and I'm hoping to learn a lot from them while I'm here.
Yeah,
well, I love that too, the humility approach, because I think there's great leadership in acknowledging that you need to learn, because I think when people become too prideful and don't think they have anything to learn, You can't learn a lot from that person, can you? If they're, you know, setting the example that we're all too good to learn.
But yeah, you pretty much have to assume you don't know what you're doing, otherwise you're not going to be paying attention.
I just want to throw out there that, Nick, I don't think dealing with the purchasing department and kind of budget overruns and last disbursements, that's never going to be interesting. I can guarantee you.
see, the problem is I crapped on all the like minutia stuff they do, but like my boss is like, he's involved in like crazy, amazing strategic stuff. Like, I mean, like, I just now getting exposed to like some of the stuff that really happens at that level, and it's pretty amazing. And to be honest, it's starting to look kind of attractive to me. Like, to really make those, like I'm starting to realize some of that stuff looks pretty awesome. I don't fully understand.
It looks like a problem waiting to be solved. Smiling here.
Like, so it's weird. So yeah, I could see a path where that could be, you know, way down the road where I could be involved in that more. And I'm definitely not saying that, you know, my boss or my boss's bosses have these jobs where they're just useless. No, they're making decisions that scare the crap out of me. I mean, literally, they make decisions on a weekly basis that it just terrifies me to think about having to make a decision on it. But they have the wisdom and the experience to do that. And that's for me, that's like, to be at a place where you can make those decisions with confidence sounds amazing. Mm.
And I really do like that. Again, just highlighting for our listeners that there's no one straight path from, I mean, if we drew a straight line from testing monitors to where you are and the things that excite your brain now, people would laugh. It's not a straight path. Like, take a lot of turns and be open to the possibilities.
It's iteration, right? It's every day you wake up. It's like, what are you going to do today that's going to be interesting? Are you going to challenge yourself, or are you just going to skate through and then entertain yourself?
Are you going to eat the balut or not? That's the question.
Yay. Now that's – wait a second, Amy. I should be asking you that question.
For listeners, this is one of my favorite Nick stories, as we were side by side, and always read the fine print. We were a bit of a challenge. I think we both have that personality of we'll try anything once and not back down. And I had never had balut before. If you haven't tried it, then you should Google it. But – the fine print says it's a fertilized egg, not just a duck egg. I couldn't.
There's a duck inside the egg.
Nick was more able to take that challenge on at a dinner long ago than I was.
Well, see, the full story is Amy didn't read that it was actually fertilized. So they brought it out. They just bring up these two eggs, and she's like, oh, okay. And then we crack them open, and then there's a duck inside. And then she's like, whoa, wait, what? And then she noped out. And the funniest part of the story, I still to this day, my favorite part was on our left were two very elegant looking blonde like vegans. And on our right were a bunch of New Jersey frat boys. So one half of the table as I look at it is like looking away and looking nauseous. And the other half is cheering me on. And it was the perfect dichotomy in between those two things. And I was like, let's just do it, because I'll try anything once. And I ate it. It tasted just like chicken soup, so it was fine.
The broth is fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Christopher Hoff will tell a much more different story, because he has a horrible story with that. But mine was not that bad. Mm.
So, Nick, I wanted to ask, you talked about going out and giving speeches, and I know you're traveling around some. Do you find that there's pressure for you to, quote unquote, suit up? Do you feel like you have to kind of restrain your personality or be more serious or executive-like as you go out and interact with these executive level meetings?
you know, not now. I mean, when I first started Intel and I started looking at – this is going to sound really horrible about Intel, but Intel is just extremely professional, right? And it's for a reason. In fact, even in just the way they work internally, they really care about interaction and like – like Intel's a great place. If you really want to develop as a professional, Intel's a great company to be at because the amount of resources they spend to develop their people is insane. And I think it's a big part of why pretty much everybody I know at Intel has been there at least 10 to 15 years. And there's a great many I run into on a daily basis that have been there 20 years. My peer at Intel, my partner in crime, has been there 18 years. And he's only a little bit older than me. It's like it blows my mind that he's been in one spot, but he's developed into who he is. So I had to go around the world and do all these things, and I had to jump from job to job to get to where I'm at. He was able to get to the same spot in one company, and they mentored him the whole way through, which is a real testament to Intel, right? And so, yeah, when I first started, I was like, my style of speaking is very different than your style, guys. And what was kind of cool is my boss and everybody around me was like, that's why we hired you. It was like, we hired you because you're different and go do this. Yeah, and I went and spoke and did it my way and got great feedback, and the great feedback went internal. And then from like my boss's boss, I got an email saying, this was awesome. Well done. In my own way, I said, hey, look, we can do this a little bit different, right, in some areas. And so I don't feel like I necessarily have to suit up or act anything other than my nature. I'm still open, you know, if there's professional things as a presenter that Intel thinks, you know, he wants to train me on, I'm open to being better at that, but I don't feel like I would be constrained. Now again, I haven't keynoted like, you know, some massive conference yet, like, you know, VMworld or something that really scare me to death. So we'll see if that comes around, what happens when that comes around. You know, I'm not like gonna be on stage at Oracle, but as of right now, I'll be honest, I was worried that their style of professionalism was counter to mine, but they're really accepting, and I've been able to hopefully, you know, motivate them to kind of look at how you talk in front of people and how you be passionate and humorous even inside of stuff, maybe a little differently.
I just love that. I am so struck again, like Matt had said earlier, that kind of improv attitude of it is inspiring to think about when you come in ready to learn, that is leadership. I think so often people think leadership is being up on high, and you're right. It builds, there's wisdom, there's choices that are made. But leadership is not just something up on high that trickles down. It is an attitude. It's an attitude of openness where you're ready to learn and absorb, and that is infectious.
I think the biggest fear I would have as a leader is in – and this is – I mean, I would say I've encountered this. The biggest thing that would make me stay up at night as a leader would be the idea that the people that work for me don't want to work for me.
That's
a great point.
Yeah, that's telling. That's telling. Well, hey, Nick, do you have any advice for people at I guess we'll just target the advice at generic people because people are listening to this podcast at very many stages of their careers. I think we said on the early days, you know, go ahead and get a crappy job and be bored and see how it is to work hard. But I don't know. Do you have any other advice for people in their careers as they make these career choices?
The first thing I always like to tell people is, I am no unique flower. I wasn't born special. I don't have a special star. I wasn't a prophesy. I wasn't appointed. I'm just normal like everybody else. I mean, even going to this podcast, the whole thing I want to say is I worked underneath Chad Sackett, who's just like a monster, right? The guy can just like communicate. He can make people feel good about themselves. He can figure out any technology they drop of a hat. The guy is amazing. And I wanted to be like him. I still want to be like him. But the biggest thing that I realize is I want to be like him the way I am, right? And that would be the advice I give people. It's like each person has their unique values or their unique angle, the unique mutation that made them. And figure out what you like and what you're good at, and then just go crazy with it and challenge yourself to improve it, right? Everybody's got an angle or a hook they enjoy doing. I enjoy what I do. So it makes it really easy to do the hard part of it, which is the hard work, the hard part of it, which is not giving up. Because I enjoy it. And I don't always enjoy every part of it, but I enjoy the holistic, the whole aggregate part of it. And and my family benefits from it. So figure out what motivates you and what you enjoy and just iterate on it. Just try and then try again. And when you get success, pat yourself on the back for about an hour and then move on and try the next thing because you're only good as your last good deed. I tell people all the time, don't look at like Scott Lowe, and I love Scott Lowe. Don't look at Scott Lowe and say, I want to be just like Scott Lowe. I want to start blogging. That may not be the right thing for you. Scott Lowe was meant to be Scott Lowe. We should each find what makes us happy, what motivates us, what drives us, and just apply effort and just repeat and just do it over and over and over again. You'll look up after a period of time and look back and go, dude, that was awesome because you just focused on what you wanted to do.
I don't quite know how to follow that up. That sounds wonderful. I will say, yeah, I'll give a little Scott Lowe story since he's not here to defend himself. If you've ever watched Scott Lowe live blog, he doesn't do that. He doesn't do as much blogging as he used to. But if you've ever watched him live blog a meeting or a presentation, the man can type like 1,000 words a minute while he's
amazing.
Listening.
Yes.
He can transcribe a talk. So he has special superpowers that he's been given.
And not only is he doing that, he will transcribe the talk better than the talk was. So I've seen that while being in the talk and realized I understood what was going on better by reading him than by listening to the person talking.
Right. But that's his superpower. I had a quote once. I said the more John Troyer I've been, the more successful I've been, right? And it sounds like the more Nick Weaver you've been, the more successful you've been.
And it's not a thing about staying in a rut and doing the same thing. It's about really – you just don't look at somebody else and say, I want to be them. Look at attributes they do. Look at personalities. Like, look at Chad's passion and say, I want passion like Chad. Look at, like, Dave McCrory. Like, Dave McCrory's patience, the way he talks to people, and, like, that twinkle in his eye about, like, he's excited about things. I look at that. I say, like, anybody that talks to Dave ends up getting, like, fascinated with talking about stuff because he has this, like, kid-like enthusiasm to him, right? And, like, look at, like, attributes of people and say, I want to have that attribute. But don't try to copy someone else. Don't try to be someone else because each person has a unique path they can do themselves. And you'll get just as much enjoyment. If you were Scott Lowe tomorrow, you might not be as happy as Scott Lowe is being Scott Lowe.
Amen. Amen.
Okay, well, here's my question I never can resist, and perhaps it's I'm a glass half-empty person. Maybe that says that about me. If you had one thing that you could say to some up-and-comer, someone in any stage of their career, never, ever, ever do this again, what would it be?
I'm trying to think about all the many mistakes I made and which one was the worst. Never, ever judge somebody too early. Never meet somebody, assign what you think they are, and not give them a chance. Because two reasons. Number one, you're an asshole. And number two, you have no idea how positive that person may affect your life, and you just completely cut that out of your life.
That's a great piece of advice.
I like it. I like it. There's a flip side of that, which is when someone tells you what they are, kind of listen to them. But that comes later, maybe.
that's actually a really good piece of advice.
Well, awesome. What people don't know is we're recording this in the evening. You got up early this morning. You had some meetings in San Francisco. You recorded another podcast. You flew home, and yet now you are still going a mile a minute. Are you a coffee drinker? What's your secret there, energy wise?
Okay, so there are some. Everybody's born with genetic advantages. Mine was not height like yours, Mr. Troyer. I would have been a terrible basketball player.
You're not a ginger.
No, technically when I was a kid I was.
Oh,
it's a dirty
man.
Secret. I come from a long line of I'm Scotch-Irish. I come from a long line of redheads. So a lot of people, that's not obvious either, but one of them is I have a lot of energy. Yeah, that's genetically I can wake up and go 100 miles an hour and then pass out and wake up and go again. So that is definitely one little advantage I have.
Nice.
Whether that's an advantage or an annoyance depends on who you talk to.
Hey, I don't have to share an office with you, so it sounds great to me. Well, Nick, where can people stalk you on the Twitters, et cetera?
So I have a blog, Nickipedia, which I have not written a whole lot for. My new New Year's resolution is to start contributing more there.
It is past New Year's already, Nick.
Yeah, I know. Nickipedia.com. And then the best way to obviously reach me is always going to be Twitter. It's always been Twitter. It's Linksbat, LynxBat.
Hey, Nick Weaver, really pleased that you had agreed after this long day to come on the show. I found the story fascinating. You're a great guy on Twitter, et cetera. We wish you all the best in your future trajectory and not getting bored at Intel.
Cool.
That's been another week of the Geek Whispers. We'll catch you all next time. You've been listening to the Geek Whispers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week. The third thing would be tips and things, or, you know, what advice would you have for others? Developer and manager. Ooh, I like that. And then maybe advice for others?
There we go. Yeah.
Okay.
That's awesome. Exactly what I'm thinking.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, and so Matt will get you hardcore on the second point, and then nobody will notice that you're not there at the end.